I often hear the complaints from like my fellow educator workers, that people who design this space and make the policies, they don't know anything about education and young children's needs.
That's Fair, who works as an early childhood educator and an outdoor daycare at the University of British Columbia. She, like many other educators, are frustrated with the way many play spaces are designed. Welcome to Growing Seedlings Podcast. I am Frances.
I'm Katie.
And I am Camila.
We are your hosts of this week's episode on Natural Play, where we will be talking about how natural play and environmental education affects early childhood development, and how these experiences can influence children's sense of responsibility, environmental awareness, and critical thinking into adulthood.
So we asked Fear, an early childhood educator, why she thought revolving play was important. And she emphasized the connection between children and nature.
And I love how children like the engaging dialogues about how they feel connected to the birds, the trees, the rocks, and many other non-human lives around us. And I think building this relationship with the land and learning from nature is like the most important benefit that I can think of with natural play.
Revolving play can create connections with nature, instill a sense of stewardship, and raise awareness of climate change. Natural play allows children to engage directly with the environment, fostering a connection and appreciation for nature. When children play in nature through activities like exploring the forest, building shelters, or observing wildlife, they're more likely to value and protect it as they grow older. And this connection can translate into a lifelong commitment to environmental stewardship and sustainable living practices, including actions to mitigate climate change.
Bridget Allums, who is the founder and CEO of Natural Pod, a company that makes sustainable furniture for children, spoke about how important natural play is for children's development.
The most important benefit is that we need to develop first and foremost self-regulation and confidence and self-esteem before we can even bring in any kind of literacy or math concepts into practice from a learning perspective. And natural play allows you to develop those key pieces. And when you are able to explore and learn the ways that truly speaks to your heart, then everything else becomes a lot easier. Loose parts, open-ended, nothing's pre-described, invitations to explore, to create something that you may be dreaming about and to see if it works, if it doesn't work, right? And that's part of it too is
However, despite overwhelming evidence that natural play is beneficial for children and their development, many barriers still exist for implementing natural play. We asked Susan Harrington, a professor of landscape architecture whose research focuses on early childhood outdoor play, what she saw was the main challenges preventing natural play in urban environments.
Some of the biggest problems is that the focus tends to be on safety. That seems to be the number one driving goal. And often, natural features are not viewed as safe for some reason. And so you tend to see a focus on equipment, which is regulated, and, can be essentially checked by certain standards, such as the Canadian Standards Association.
Susan also emphasized that a big reason for the lack of natural play is money and funding. Most of the play spaces, at least in the context of Vancouver, are funded by developers. There doesn't seem to be an interest in pursuing natural play spaces in development projects. In addition to the safety and cost concerns, climate change and maintenance concerns are making it more challenging to get community support.
And then, another huge barrier is climate change because it's, with heat domes, they're killing off plants. It's really, you're trying to bring natural elements into it, into the play environment that's hard. They oftentimes will not survive. And so you have to be really careful on your plant selection. But I also say with climate change, And particularly the fires we've seen, that sometimes going outside in general is not healthy because the air quality is so poor.
Susan makes a good point about the difficulty of establishing new natural play areas in the face of climate change. But we think this also highlights a much greater need for more natural play spaces. In a 2017 study by Catherine Broom, associate professor at the University of British Columbia, Okanagan, positive childhood experiences playing in nature were strongly correlated with appreciation for nature as adults. The more positive the experiences, the more the person appreciated nature as an adult. Natural play and environmental education provide opportunities to instill values of environmental responsibility, empathy, and ethical consideration for all living beings. Children learn about the interconnectedness of ecosystems and the importance of respecting and protecting the natural world. Here's Susan Harrington again to describe these empathy and ethical considerations.
And they also like to watch and observe. And they even have very, I've seen three-year-olds have very kind of sophisticated moral discussions on the fate of a worm or a spider, which they'll like debate, well, should it live or should it die, right? And so if you never have those insects or worms in your play environment, you never have those kind of very important sort of moral questions about life. And it also, you know, I think it also prompts curiosity and wonder, as well as being able to identify patterns, you know, such as seasonal change. And those are really the foundations of scientific thinking. So I think, you know, if we think science is part of the solution to addressing climate change, that would certainly provide a link.
Yeah, and like Frances was saying, children are not only the beneficiaries of environmental education, but also the future agents of change in the fight against climate change. By nurturing their curiosity, agency, and sense of responsibility, natural play and environmental education can empower children to become advocates and leaders in their community. So, I'm sure you're wondering, after listening to this week's episode of the podcast, how can designers help nurture curiosity and empower children through natural play? Well, we asked each of the experts we interviewed their thoughts, and the overwhelming answer was to just watch and listen. How easy is that? Understanding how children interact with play spaces, what they're engaged with, and what safety really looks like, we begin to understand that we need to listen to children and what works for them in the spaces that they're occupying. And we need to engage with early childhood educators who work with these children on a regular basis. Water and mud play, tree climbing, and log jumping are all just a few great examples of natural and risky play that kids love and that they should be encouraged to do.
The work, supporting the work, is more about actually listening to educators, engaging with them, meeting them where they're at, connecting with the community, working with students.
Bridget also noted that a lot of play spaces are overprescribed and that designers could help by leaving play spaces more open to interpretation.
I think a lot of the solutions around having a space that feels welcoming, to really be more intentional about what you put in your space, to open the blinds, turn the lights off, open the windows, have access to nature, really think about what is in my space. Does it have a purpose? What else can it be? And really staying away from predetermined things like, you know, thinking about having a kitchen play, a house play, puppet play, all those things. Well, what if you just had something that was open-ended?
If designers and architects visit a childcare programs for a few times, or like just being with the children, work with the children on the floor, maybe they will have a better idea of what early childhood education is really like, and how they can kind of design the ECE spaces with more recognition and acknowledgement of children's needs and interests.
I think one of the things you can do is listen, actually listen to what they actually do outside. Talk to them of what they think about the space. What do the kids find exciting? What do the kids find, a challenge in a negative way? I mean, I think a lot of times their kind of voices are not included in the design of outdoor play spaces, but they actually work in these spaces with the children.
Engaging in wild play fosters symbiotic relationship between children and nature, pivotal for instigating a shift in our approach to climate change. By integrating rewilding play and pedagogy, children gain invaluable virtues such as empathy, scientific curiosity, and a sense of environmental stewardship. This contrasts with the previous emphasis on developmental priorities, highlighting a paradigm shift towards viewing children not as vulnerable individuals in need of protection, but as future agents equipped to tackle environmental challenges. As climate change threatens to diminish natural spaces suitable for outdoor play, children face the prospect of losing vital opportunities for wild exploration. Understanding the ramification of this loss is crucial. Children represent our future, yet as adults, we must also consider the type of learning environments we wish to cultivate for them. Addressing this amidst the challenges posed by climate change heightens our awareness of the necessary task ahead.
Well, that's a wrap on this week's episode of the Growing Seedlings podcast. I'm your host, Katie, joined by my two co-hosts, Camilla and Francis. And we just have a huge special thanks to our guests, Fear Chen, Susan Harrington, and Bridget Alomes for their valuable insights on natural play spaces and the challenges children can overcome in the face of climate change when given greater opportunities for their future. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode, and we hope that you tune in next week.